This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk about the hazards of electronic waste and the upcoming Players for the Planet e-waste recycling drive. Starting us off, the $20 bill is getting an historic makeover as former slave and abolitionist Harriet Tubman replaces Andrew Jackson on the front of the bill with a smaller picture of President Jackson appearing on the reverse side. The U.S. Treasury also plans to add images of women to the backs of the $5 and $10 bills. And joining us to discuss the changes, how our currency is designed, and to look at the life of Harriet Tubman is Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris, great to see you this afternoon.
Mark, it's always a pleasure to be here. It's exciting. Here we are. It's the end of April. It's April 29th. The Flying Pig Marathon and Half Marathon are this weekend. I mean, Cincinnati will be putting its best foot forward. Unfortunately, we won't be putting our best weather forward. But that I don't know of anyone who's canceled their trip to come here, and that might hurt some of the last minute registrations. But it's really such a wonderful time.
And you used to run, didn't you, Chris?
I still try to.
Yeah.
I haven't. You know, I've run the Flying Pig three times. The whole idea, I mean, I don't never tried to win it. My goal was just to finish ahead of the ambulance, but it's great training. And one of the things, among the other many wonderful things about it, is what it does for the city and the region. And it fills hotels. It brings people from all around the world to come to see what we have to offer here. And it just gets better every year. There'll be the convention center, will be where people will meet to pick up all their running stuff, and people will be staying in hotels and touring and seeing all the historic sites. What's amazing is there are about 4,000 or so people who run the full marathon, all 26.2 miles. There are about three times as many running the half marathon, which they both go up through Eden Park and through Walnut Hills, through go up Woodburn Drive, and then the full marathoners turn right. They head east down Madison Road. The half marathoners turn left, right there at St. Francis de Sales Church, where Father Gene can say hi to them, and head towards Gilbert, and they turn right in front of the Harriet Beecher Stowe House, which, you know, connection to, we're talking about Harriet Tubman and some of the people who are going to be on the back of the $10 bill. There's a big connection with Harriet Beecher Stowe and many of the women who are on the back of the $10 bill. It's quite a story.
And we'll have to remember to talk about this
as we go along here. Yeah.
Before we get into the changes that are coming to U.S. currency, let's talk about the numbers that are in play for the market today. What's the big thing that's driving the market?
Well, just, you know, what's really driving it today is the fact that it's a Friday, and no one wants to do anything heroic ahead of a weekend. People have been stepping back and watching oil, which 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, was trading around $26 a barrel. And that brought a lot of people out onto the, you know, print and electronic media saying, oh, it's going to go to 20 and 15 and 10. And, well, it's closer to 50 now than it is to 15. Oil's trading around $46 a barrel now. It's the laws of supply and demand, make their way just within the last few minutes. Every Friday now, they've been doing it for a long time, but people pay more attention to it now. Baker Hughes, which sells drill bits, they've been keeping count of how many rigs are actually drilling for oil. Baker Hughes just reported that the count of rigs, active drilling rigs, dropped again for the 11th straight week. And so when you decrease the supply of something, if the demand remains constant, the value of the thing goes up. And that's what we're seeing with oil. So the next step, if oil is going up in value, oil is bought and sold with what kind of currency? It's sold, bought and sold in Yankee dollars. And so if oil's going up anyway because of the supply-demand issue, and that means the dollar, all other things being equal, will drop in value. And a cheaper dollar does what for U.S. manufacturers? It makes their products more competitive. And so we've seen that happening. So we've seen strength in the industrials. Today, we've got to look at personal income figures. They were expected.
Where did those come in at?
The number was expected to be 0.3%. It was actually 0.4% higher.
So a little better than expected.
A little better, but since the American economy is roughly, you know, 2/3 or so by many counts, consumer spending, consumer driven, they were looking more closely at the consumer spending number. That was expected to be up 0.2%. It was up only 0.1%. And so that kind of sent some shock waves through the economy. But again, how do you measure consumer spending? Look at Amazon, which not as a recommendation, but if you look at Amazon's earnings, they exceeded the street expectations. They reposted last night after the close, and it took off like a rocket. It was just extraordinary to watch it move. It was up over $70 a share last night after the close, and this morning it's putting a charge into the technology sector. So there's a lot of stuff to watch. It's fascinating stuff.
Okay. Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. So last week, the Treasury Department announces that Harriet Tubman's going to be replacing Andrew Jackson on the front of the $20
bill.
On the front, right. And Andrew Jackson's now, he's still going to be on the bill, but now he's going to be on the reverse side.
Yes.
And let's talk about Harriet Tubman, though, because this is an interesting choice to put on the front of the $20 bill. She is a very significant person in the history of our country. She was born into slavery in 1822 in Maryland. She escaped her slavery when she was 27 years old. She became a leader in the Underground Railroad movement, freeing slaves. So just an incredible person.
Yeah, and it didn't stop there. I mean, after the war, she became one of the largest proponents for women's rights, and especially in voting. And she, unfortunately, like many of them, did not live long enough to see that amendment become law. But when you think about what she did, she was born, again, in 1822. That would make her 11 years younger than the other famous Harriet Beecher Stowe. And having escaped slavery, if you made it over the border from a slave state into a so-called free state, you weren't really safe. Under the Fugitive Slave Acts of 1793 and then later in 1850, you could still be accused of being a runaway, brought into court, and under the 1850 Act, the magistrate who was assembled, who would be summoned to judge you, well, by the way, if you were an accused runaway slave, you weren't allowed to testify in your own behalf. And the magistrate would be paid $5 if you were found to be a free person, but $10,
oh, wow.
$10 to send you back or send you into slavery. So, you know, in the financial world, that's called a conflict of interest.
Yeah. And that's a big conflict of interest.
And ironically, some of the people who are on U.S. currency helped change the course of that. Salmon P. Chase was the Treasury Secretary under Lincoln, governor of Ohio prior to that, and the U.S. Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. His law career started here in Cincinnati. There's a plaque with his name on it down around Third and Main, where his office was. He was referred to as the Attorney General for the underground for the runaway slave. He helped change the course of that. Chase William Seward, who came to Cincinnati to work with Chase on a famous Underground Railroad case, the Jones versus Van Zandt case, and then William Stanton, Stanton was on U.S. currency, Seward was on U.S. currency, and of course Chase found his way onto U.S. currency at some point. But to have Harriet Tubman, yeah, Chase was on currency. I have it here.
Okay.
We'll get to which one he was on later. But.
Okay. Well, getting back to Harriet Tubman, though, I mean,
yes.
Again, how many slaves did she help free?
Well, it was
in the hundreds.
The number, according to Wikipedia, now this is not definitive. It's just a place
it's
to
just
start.
According to Wikipedia,
right,
okay.
Right. And again, remember what we do here, we tell people kind of where to dig and pass out shovels, but you got to do your own digging. Keep in mind that people who were helping others escape on the Underground Railroad, even if you hadn't gone back in to slave territory, which was just dangerous intrinsically anyway, you were breaking the law. So they didn't really keep – they went out of their way to destroy records, let alone keep good records. But she went back into the slave territories at least 13 times. Any one time would have been extremely dangerous, but she got her family out first and then kept going back and forth to get her you know, other friends and people who needed help out. What was also interesting is that during the Civil War, she first started working for the Union Army, and then she became a spy. And you know, spies were killed, but that's what she did. She risked her life, and she did this despite suffering a serious injury.
Yeah, she had some health problems. This is very impressive, because she suffered seizures, didn't she?
Seizures? Well, wouldn't you, if you got hit in the head with a metal frying pan? One of her masters was throwing a metal frying pan at one of the other enslaved people and missed that person, but it hit her in the head. And later in life, she actually had to have surgery to relieve some of the pain. Yeah, but she suffered from that serious injury, brain injury, for the rest of her life.
And yeah, you were mentioning that even after she escaped, she was still wanted. I believe at one point there was actually a reward of some type.
Of course.
$300 reward is what I think I heard. I mean, for her return.
At least. She risked her life to help other people. And then didn't stop there. And so it's not only what she did before the war started and what she did during the war, you know, putting her life in jeopardy, but after the Civil War, there was quite a bit of controversy, because many of the abolitionists who were especially abolitionists had kind of gathered around William Lloyd Garrison. There's a great book about this by Henry Mayer. It's called All on Fire. Garrison, of course, volatile and flame-throwing abolitionist from Boston. He believed that slavery should just be abolished immediately, and people who were gathered around him felt the same way. After the Civil War, after the amendment that outlawed slavery was passed, he said, "I'm done. We're done." Well, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Harriet Tubman, Susan B. Anthony, Lucretia Mott, and others said, "Well, wait a minute. Women can't vote." So even when the vote was extended, the 15th Amendment, there were many many women abolitionists split with the abolitionist movement over that 15th Amendment and actually lobbied against the passage of extending the vote to African Americans because it didn't include women. So that was a major turning point. After the war, the battle shifted from the battlefield. The war between the states continues to be the war between the minds, the war between the ears.
Well, we will continue our conversation about Harriet Tubman and the changes that are coming to U.S. currency, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. Harriet Tubman's going to be on the front of the $20 bill, and there are changes in store for the $5 and $10 bills. Chris DeSimio, financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati, joins us on this April 30th, 2016, and you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris, you were talking about the women's suffrage movement, women gaining the right to vote, and Harriet Tubman is the first African-American woman to be on the front of a U.S. banknote, but she's not the first woman. When was the last time a woman was on a paper note?
It goes way back.
Way, way back. I mean, in the 1800s, though.
Seriously way back. In 1886, the first lady of the United States, Martha Custis Washington, was on the reverse of the $1 bill.
So she wasn't on the front. She was on the back
of
the
reverse. 1896.
Okay.
Briefly. And then prior to that, in 1862, there was a Confederate currency that had a woman on it. And I'm looking it up right here. But it wasn't... It certainly, you know, it's like that trivia question: name two American presidents who were born in Kentucky. Most people go with Lincoln, and then you stumble on the second one. Well, it's a trick question, because the alleged answer is Jefferson Davis, because he was a president. He was born in Kentucky, but he wasn't a president of the United States.
Okay,
Davis, interestingly, was a he had lobbied for the state of Mississippi to default on its notes, which made the foreign bankers suspicious of the Confederacy. We'll get to that later because that plays into local history.
There's an interesting story behind that, yes.
Yes, but it's fascinating. Not only is Harriet Tubman on the 20, the part of the irony is that Andrew Jackson got onto the front of the 20 in the first place because it was his war against the Second Bank of the United States and his refusal to renew its charter that triggered.
So here's a guy who's against the national banking system and he gets on currency.
Right, right. And he... That act, that single act, he changes to that paper currency would no longer be, acceptable, and that deals had to be done in specie. So when you think about people, they were doing what's called a land office business. People were making money hand over fist, but carrying it around in currency was not easy. What Andrew Jackson did by not renewing that charter, he shut the economy down to a grinding halt, and that was so-called the Panic of 1837 didn't just last in 1837. It lasted all the way into the 1840s, and many historians believe that the Panic of 1837 and subsequent depression that followed was worse than the Great Depression of nearly 100 years later.
Okay,
so having Andrew Jackson on currency in the first place is really ironic. It's a dark, very, very twisted joke.
Exactly. But were you saying there was a woman on Confederate paper currency?
Yes. Yes. And I had it right here and it just went away on my computer. But yes. But that was, of course, during the Civil War. Think about what currency was, though. And there's an interesting twist here there's a local town that has a connection to Confederate finances during the Civil War. Because there's a great book, a lot of great books, but Neil Ferguson, it's spelled N-I-A-L-L, but it's pronounced Neil Ferguson, has a book called The Ascent of Money, and he talks about the history of money. And in this book, he talks about how important it is how credit works. And collateral is only valuable if the creditor can get his hands on it, his or her hands on it. And so starved for cash, the Confederacy hired some bankers from Europe to find ways to make money, to raise money for the Confederacy, much the same as John Adams had done and other Americans had done during the Revolution. He goes to Europe. They go to Europe and they work with a French banking firm. And this French banker decides, yes, we'll back Confederate bonds with cotton because Great Britain needs cotton to keep those mills going.
Of all things.
Exactly. That's what the South had lots of. It was very valuable.
Because it's usually been precious metals in the past.
Yeah, exactly. These were cotton-backed bonds, and the issue was oversubscribed because it not only paid a fixed interest rate of 7%, and talk about optimism, these were 20-year bonds. they also could be converted to cotton at a fixed price of roughly about 12 cents a pound U.S., and what happened then was that when David Farragut captured New Orleans, no one could get their hands on the collateral. And so eventually people decided that these cotton bonds weren't such a good thing. And that prevented the South from using the money the way they wanted to. The banker who thought that up, though, a French banker, eventually came to the United States. He came to the U.S., buying a railroad company that ran out of Cincinnati, among his other assets. And as the train went up the hill out of the Ohio River Valley, they had a depot in northern Kentucky, and the name, they didn't like the original name for it. So it was changed in honor of his name, this French banker who designed these cotton bonds.
Okay.
I'm
hooked.
In Kentucky, do you go to Versailles or Versailles? It's Versailles.
Versailles, uh-huh.
When you're in Bourbon County, do you go to Paris or to Paris?
Paris.
If you're on your way to the airport, do you stop at Erlanger or is it Erlanger? Erlanger, Kentucky. Yep. In fact, there was a great article written by a gentleman who's who heads up the public history department at NKU about that. Fascinating, fascinating story.
Well, let's talk about some of the other famous Ohioan, Cincinnatians, people connected with our listening area who ended up on U.S. currency. Ulysses S. Grant.
Of course, on the 50. Born just about 25 miles from Cincinnati at Point Pleasant on the Ohio River, roughly halfway between here and Ripley. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Been on the $50 bill for a long, long time. Chase, of course, governor of Ohio, office here in Cincinnati, on the $10,000 bill. Edwin Stanton. Lincoln's Secretary of War was briefly on U.S. currency. He was here in Cincinnati where he sent Lincoln home. He was arguing a case. It was a McCormick Reaper case. So Stanton was briefly on. But what's even more interesting about the people who have been on the currency and their connection with Ohio, I mean, John Quincy Adams was on U.S. currency back in the 1860s. His connection to Cincinnati? Well, Mount Ida in the early 1840s was renamed in his honor because he had been a chief proponent of the observatory that was built up there, and it was renamed Mount Adams in his
– Oh, okay.
It was called
that
Mount Ida.
That makes sense.
Right. So he was on the $500 bill in 1869.
Who else? Anybody else? Is George Washington on that list, Chris?
Well, of course. He's on the $1 bill. But,
okay.
And he owned, of course, property all throughout the Ohio Valley. Franklin, of course, also was a member of the Ohio Company. Robert Fulton, believe it or not, was on the $2 bill in 1896. There's a little town when you drive along the Columbia Parkway east of Cincinnati. There's a little sign that says Fulton. That's named after him because that's where all the riverboats were built. So the little riverboat building area of Cincinnati was named Fulton. So there's a Cincinnati. I mean, there are so many of them. But what a lot of people are unaware of are the number of what the stories of the women who are going to be on the back of the $10 bill.
And right. I think the 10 and the 5
yes.
actually were going to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And their connection with Cincinnati. One of them, for example, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Most people think of her as being from New York. Of course, she was from New York. Her cousin was Gerrit Smith, a famous abolitionist, a famous wealthy abolitionist. She married a gentleman named Henry Brewster Stanton. Very few people know that man's name. He was an accomplished attorney. He was a collector of customs for the port of New York during the Civil War, kind of controversial. But before he married Elizabeth Cady Stanton, he was here in Cincinnati, going to college up in Walnut Hills at the Lane Seminary. He was one of the leaders of the so-called Lane Debates, who led those students away from Cincinnati eventually. They wanted to talk about slavery and how to abolish it. They were pretty much run out of town by the financial interests. They went to Oberlin, and Stanton enrolled at Oberlin and then became a speaker to form abolition societies all throughout the Northeast, Northeast Ohio and Western and upstate New York, the so-called Finger Lake region, the burned over district. And that's where he met Elizabeth Cady. And so he's the asterisk, but Elizabeth Cady Stanton's future husband was here in Cincinnati.
Who else, Chris?
Lucretia Mott, for example. Lucretia Mott was a famous abolitionist, a Quaker. She inspired a lot of the leaders in women rights. So many of these people started out as abolitionists. They started out as abolitionists first, and then they led, which led them into the world of women's rights. So this $10 note is pretty interesting because remember, Hamilton has been on that $10 note for a long time, and he was the first one to be considered to be kicked off.
That's right, because of the original idea was to replace Alexander Hamilton on the $10 bill.
That's correct.
Of course, he's one of our nation's founders. He's the first U.S. Treasury Secretary. So why was – what happened there? What saved him?
Well, some people say it was the Broadway.
The Broadway play.
And perhaps it was Ron Chernow's excellent biography of Alexander Hamilton. Anyone who's interested in the history of currency and credit and the economy in which we live would really be well advised to read Ron Chernow's masterpiece of Alexander Hamilton, because a lot of these same figures keep coming back and forth. But you know, a lot of people are unaware of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's Cincinnati connection. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are unaware of who Lucretia Mott was. And why she mattered. But the role of Quakers in the Underground Railroad cannot be – it's impossible to overstate it. Levi Coffin here in Cincinnati, who ran a free goods store downtown, they were Quakers. He shows up in Uncle Tom's Cabin as Mr. Halliday. So these are the people who actually did the heavy lifting. So,
and Susan B. Anthony is also going to be one of the
– She is. She is. And, of course, she worked hand in hand with Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Ken Burns thought enough of this topic that he did a film about Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony about 20 years ago called Not for Ourselves Alone, and it's excellent.
Yeah, Chris, the Treasury rule nowadays is that anyone pictured on a bill has to be deceased. Was that always the case, or was anyone living ever pictured on currency?
A few have been. It's a rule now, but it's considered bad luck, I suppose. Again, let me get this number here. I think, not Franklin, but generally speaking. So we didn't have paper currency for a long time. We just didn't have
paper. Yeah, coins were favored over currency for a long stretch.
Well, sure.
They were more trusted.
Well, more trusted because it's harder to counterfeit a coin. And paper currency, you have to trust the issuer. And so the paper currency itself was not nearly as desirable. And so even though, for example, during the Civil War, U.S. currency, the greenback, lost about 60% of its value. The grayback, the Confederate currency, lost nearly all of its value. So in terms of the living people on the currency, I'm going to have to look at that. I'm not 100% sure, and I wouldn't want to say something that's not 100% accurate.
Yeah, my guess would be Woodrow Wilson maybe. He was on the face of the $100,000 bill. Which you won't see anymore, but that was out in the 30s, so perhaps Woodrow Wilson, because that was close to his time.
I don't think so. I think they did
that
after he
passed away. Before that? Okay.
Yep. I'm getting right to it here. Woodrow Wilson was on and put on the $100,000 bill in 1934.
Okay, so it was after he had passed away.
Right. Usually the Sherman brothers, John Sherman and William Tecumseh Sherman, both from Ohio, were on currency. General William Tecumseh Sherman in 1891, he was on the $500 bill. And before Grant was on the $50 banknote, it was John Sherman. His brother, senator from Ohio.
You brought up the $2 bill earlier. That's been around a long time. I just keep wondering why that particular bill never catches on.
Who knows?
I think some people view it as bad luck.
It came back for the bicentennial 1976, had the picture of the signing. It was a kind of a commemorative issue. You know, commemorative anything, think about it, is interesting because commemorative stamps, a stamp is just a tax that you pay in advance for something that you want the government to do for you, namely deliver a letter. But if you can make a stamp that people pay for but never use, then people are giving you money to not do something. And so you see a lot of countries issue commemorative stamps. So that's commemorative currency kind of into the same category.
Yeah, and along the same lines as the $2 bill, the dollar coins never seemed to have caught on either. And you had Sacagawea pictured on one of those coins.
You had
Susan B. Anthony pictured on another.
And that was an interesting shaped coin. Then you had the Eisenhower dollars. And the Eisenhower dollars were they were a big hit out in Las Vegas.
And if you've never seen one of these, it's a big coin.
It's a large,
It's about twice the size I would say of a 50-cent piece.
It is a large, large coin. But you know, it's interesting too. This $5 bill is going to have Martin Luther King, Marian Anderson, and Eleanor Roosevelt on it. In addition, they'll be on the reverse, and Lincoln, of course, who has a Cincinnati connection, will be on the. He'll continue to be on the front of the $5 bill.
Now, has the Treasury Department said when these new bills are going to be put into circulation yet?
Yes. And in fact, they're going to be eased in. There is a website. Everyone got their something to write with? It's modernmoney, all one word, .treasury.gov. Modernmoney.treasury.gov. And this $20 bill is going to come out, I think, within a few years.
Yeah, I've heard the final concept design is 2020,
yeah.
2020, which interestingly, that's the
19th Amendment anniversary.
100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote.
That's the idea. So many of these women happen to have been abolitionists and have Harriet Tubman, though, who probably – when they all
– I heard she was a staunch supporter of women's right to vote.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. She worked in that field for a long, long time. Her house that she lived in Auburn, New York, by the way, was purchased from the former Treasury – Secretary of State William Seward, himself a fervent abolitionist. And she bought that house from him and lived there since before the Civil War. So they knew each other. This was just southwest of Syracuse, where, upstate New York was a hotbed of both abolitionists and women's rights. That's kind of the general region where the Seneca Falls Convention was in the late 1840s.
So, Chris, we're going to have all these changes made, the 5, the 10, the 20. Is there anything else out there in the future, or is that going to be it? We get this run of changes, and then things will calm down for a little while.
Well, what isn't known is what these things will buy. You know, inflation has been dormant lately, but what will $5 or $10 or $20 buy? What, in fact, will they buy? The websites that maintained by the government, by the U.S. government, describe the history of money and all the different things they're doing to prevent counterfeiting in terms of the different kinds of threads that are in there, the different kinds of electronic devices and watermarks and pretty sophisticated anti-counterfeiting pieces. But right now, the mystery really is, what will this money buy?
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're very
welcome.
Always
good to see you. Chris DeSimio is a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And as a reminder, the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up, what to do with all that electronic waste. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.